That will rise to 15%, which is a lot in a country with a dollarized policy.
La guerra a la delincuencia ha traído...
The war on crime has brought his friends from the leadership of the Southern Command, headed by Laura Richardson, to organize the country.
Para organizar el país. Los norteamericanos hoy día ingresan a Ecuador.
The North Americans are there because today they enter Ecuador without any inspection of their documents or what they bring.
Ni a lo que ellos traen. De cualquier manera, cuando se van.
In any case, when they leave, they're not inspected either. That's the agreement they reached.
Los policías y los soldados.
The police and soldiers who arrive in Ecuador, according to what they have agreed, will not have to give any account to the Ecuadorian authorities, even if they commit the most cruel crimes. And they can walk freely in the country. That's the reality.
Esa es la realidad.
The weapons of Russian origin that were in Ecuador, what do you think about that?
¿Qué creen? Se lo pasó Noboa.
Noboa passed him under the Pentagon. That happened also to those of Chinese origin. All are to be sent to Ukraine. A Ukrainian plane belonging to Zelensky landed a few days ago in Quito.
Un avión ucraniano de Zelensky aterrizó hace pocos días en Quito. De cualquier manera.
In any case, sovereignty, independence, and social rights today have blatantly receded in Ecuador. Ecuador is stopping to be a country and is becoming a factory. The problem for us, the Latin Americans, is that the United States is planning for the rest of our continent. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Eduardo Artes. Bien, hoy estamos con
Irene. Well, today we're with Irene Leon from Ecuador. Ecuadorian sociologist, political analyst, and member of the World Social Forum, WFS, since its inception in 2021. Also a member of the Social Forum of the Americas and the Network of Intellectuals, Artists, and Social Movements in Defense of Humanity. Welcome to Black and White.
Bienvenida a Negro y Blanco.
Hello, I'm very happy to be with you in this program, and at this time, I'm at your service.
Irene, ¿qué pasa en Ecuador?
Irene, what is going on in Ecuador? What is the story of criminals and drug traffickers? Is there a power struggle in Ecuador? They attacked a television channel. The same thing is said about the social groups. In many cases, social organizations are accused of terrorism. The topic of conversation is not drug traffickers, but terrorists. What is the foundation of these issues? What is really going on in Ecuador?
Well, I think the key to this is the condition that Ecuador is in. Since more than 6 years ago, there was a promise of change in Ecuador, change and transformation of the country with a governance and project definition for the country and based on different dimensions of such issues. Ecuador wanted to implement socialism and good life, which has the support of the Constitution. Our constitution is considered one of the most advanced constitutions in the world. Ecuador was once the second country in Latin America and the Caribbean, but since 6 years ago, the country has plunged into what I call a neoliberal coup. In other words, an attempt to restore neoliberalism to the country at any cost. Since then, our country has been grappling with legal war, political persecution, and judicial and media imposition based on some scenarios. In the end, all this case creates an environment in which politics, definition of the country, and country management within the framework of the provisions of the Constitution remain only in words and on paper. Therefore, in the same period of time, with the opening of the markets and the governance of the country, Various centers of illegal capital have been established in the country to provide the basis for neoliberal actions. The main focus is close to financial capital because Ecuador is a dollarized country. Ecuador lost its national currency more than 20 years ago, and the U.S. dollar prevailed through Ecuador. Therefore, these conditions have prepared the ground for various money laundering operations and unauthorized transactions. In these transactions, financial capital is transferred. Therefore, this financial flow is related to illegal businesses and is known as Financial Capital Bank. It's very important that a turnaround has taken place in Ecuador and is taking place. In addition to illegal capital, there is the export sector, which is also very important, as well as the international trade sector, where there is also a possibility that illegal capital circulates in these sectors. Also, there are sections related to human trafficking and other trafficking, including drug trafficking. Therefore, I say all these issues to explain that this problem that exists is caused by the structural orientations of the country and the region. In this problem, the proceeds of these businesses, which are considered illegitimate, go into neoliberal and free market activities where different actors and sectors interact with each other, as I mentioned. As a part of these activities and shrinking the government, which is a part of neoliberalism, in Ecuador we see the transfer of power to powerful institutions, factual powers, that I mentioned. So all the trends that we're talking about, including attacks, drug trafficking, and a certain kind of violence that is seen, are caused by the opening of the market doors in Ecuador, the de-governance in the country, and the return of neoliberalism against the good life constitution in Ecuador. The constitution, contrary to this trend, defines Ecuador as a country with a multi-sector and diverse economy, whose production is also multi-sector and diverse. Ecuador plays a pivotal role in the structure of regional integration and Latin America and South America.
Yes, that's correct. We're going to take a short break. I think it became very clear that the root of this problem is the neoliberal system. We'll be back in a few seconds.
We're
back with Irene Leon from Ecuador in Black and White. Irene, so far we feel that the actions taken by the young Noboa government are a clear abuse of the true crime situation. You have explained this situation very well, how this situation is connected with large economic groups. Let's be frank that the goal of Noboa is to drag the country into the mouth of American imperialism, that is, to bring the American military and announcing it.
Porque la llegada de las tropas norteamericanas o los anuncios de las mismas.
How should be described the presence of Laura Richardson? What do these agreements mean? 124 projects are planned for this year, and it's supposed to last for 5 years.
24 actividades ya planificadas y van a estar 5 años. ¿No? ¿Cómo se fortalece la presencia militar policial?
How will these actions strengthen the U.S. military and police presence? In addition to the Manta base issue and the Galapagos becoming some kind of natural aircraft carrier, it seems they're taking advantage of this economic crisis, a crisis of crime, economics, privatization, increased VAT, etc. What else is in this?
privatizaciones, subida del IVA, etcétera. ¿No hay algo más en esto?
Mira, yo creo que un punto central de lo que...
I think you touched on one of the central issues that is happening in Ecuador. We're not alone in our own country. And part of what is happening is due to differences regarding the country's model and orientation at the domestic level, which is related to the international geopolitical environment. But the United States is a very important player that has a geostrategic agenda for the region as well, for Latin America. In this framework, Ecuador has its own interest due to its geopolitical position and being located in the middle of the globe and benefiting from preferred ports in the Pacific Ocean due to several factors. And in addition, it is considered a key country for the new geostrategic arrangement and the hemisphere proposed by the United States. Therefore, the changes that have been taking place in Ecuador since 6 years ago, as I mentioned earlier, have a close relationship with the alignment of foreign policy with U.S. strategy and geostrategy. There are several examples in recent years. For example, the U.S. Senate approved the law related to the government of Ecuador, which is called the Cooperation Act between the United States and Ecuador, a law to rule another country. The United States passed a law for Ecuador that covers all areas of life in our country, not only international relations, but also geopolitical order, security, defense, political management, and others. This is an important precedent. This law was passed in December 2022. Then during this process, we saw a diplomatic, or as you said, a military offensive, Southern Command. And what happened a few days ago in Ecuador are examples of this. Therefore, here we see the deployment of military force, which is against the Constitution, because the Constitution has introduced Ecuador as a country of peace without the presence of military bases and military aggression, especially foreign bases. Even in national definitions, the culture of peace is emphasized. Now, in such a country, a very detailed military cooperation agreement is signed. With the military agreement between the United States and Ecuador in October, there is no more talk of one, two, or three military bases. It's about handing the country over to intelligence operations and diplomatic exercises. In this agreement, it's guaranteed that all operations, personnel, intelligence services, etc., will have diplomatic immunity and will be subject to American laws, despite the fact that they're in Ecuador. It is difficult for me to explain this issue because it is both in the approved law, which we mention as an unprecedented case, that a law is approved in the United States to govern Ecuador, and in the military agreements, because this is not the first agreement. It is said that they're conducting an experiment of a new type of American protectorate, which bypasses the country's laws, constitution, and international agreement in this model in order to direct the country to another destination and another role, which is within the framework of foreign geostrategic design. So that's the path that Ecuador is on. And without a doubt, our recent experience as a country has been a lifetime of chaos. We have the numerous moments of unprecedented, unexpected, and even most unjustified chaos, followed by offers of security. In other words, leaving national sovereignty and becoming a client of private commercial packages of security models like what we currently have in Ecuador. Therefore, what we are witnessing is clearly our concern, because our country, which is defined on the basis of sovereignty, is becoming a protectorate. This is worrying. Another worrying issue is that the country has gone as far as declaring a civil war. That is what the president of Ecuador has announced. He has the military support of the Southern Command, the regime of Israel, and the government of Ukraine. He received a military plane from this country, which is an American aid received this week. This is an international invasion against a Latin American country that includes a declaration by CELAC, Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, which declares the region a land of peace. They brought the country into an unexpected military situation. In fact, numerous riot and violence tactics have been implemented in Ecuador with the aim of offering settlement packages to it.
Distintas aplicaciones de tácticas de violencia y de caos para luego ofrecer también paquetes de solución.
Así es. para ir acercándonos ya al final.
Yes, that's right. What has been the reaction of the Ecuadorian people, the people who have established various movements?
¿Qué pasa con la CONAI, es decir, con las organizaciones indígenas?
Where is the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador? What about the Federation of Secondary Students of Ecuador? What about the Federation of Students, Trade Unions, National Union of Teachers? I mean, we have witnessed large demonstrations since the past.
¿Ha visto grandes movilizaciones? ¿No? ¿Y qué pasa con las fuerzas democráticas?
What happened to the democratic forces or patriotic forces? In such a difficult situation for Ecuador, what are the conditions of these groups?
Eso puede ser.
This could be a bad example, as you explained, and a path that they set for all of Latin America.
América Latina, como tú lo has explicado.
Así es. Mira, creo que estas tácticas de sembrar el caos.
Yes, that's right. I believe that these techniques of developing chaos and intimidation of people, especially in the case of Ecuador, which until recently was known as the axis of peace in the region, will lead people to an unexpected reaction. For example, the fear that is instilled through really effective media work against these threats has an impact on ordinary people and on the economy and on all aspects of life. And without a doubt, it cannot be denied that the people of Ecuador are intimidated. For example, since the declaration of civil war under the heading of terrorism, which targets the smallest common criminal and the biggest leader of drug trafficking, there's been confusion in the country, and people want these issues to be resolved so that they can act more freely. When the country is stopped due to the declaration of this war, we're facing unusual conditions in all fields, and it is clear that society has many questions. Not only experts, but also common sense says that, for the problems that exist in Ecuador, maybe it was possible to solve them with techniques focused on the same issues. Issues such as violent and dangerous acts. It would have been better if we had not declared war across the border and asked for help from the Southern Command and other actors, such as the extreme right-wing government of Argentina, to solve the country's problem. With these talks, the popular and social movement, which is very diverse in our country, was worried and expressed dissatisfaction with the current situation and asked for an explanation. The network of intellectuals defending humanity, the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador, and other institutions have expressed concerns about these conditions, especially because of these declared war conditions. Democratic capabilities are limited.
Se obstruyen las capacidades democráticas.
El tiempo es cruel.
Time is cruel. For this reason, we say goodbye to Irene Leon, who has an excellent and very powerful presence. Thank you, Irene Leon. This is Black and White.
I should always thank the Black and White program. Thank you. See you soon.
Hasta pronto.
See you soon.
A diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The United Nations Aid Coordinator for the Gaza Strip says no organization could ever replace the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, because of its tremendous capacity in handling the situation in the besieged Palestinian territory. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The English website of Al Mayadeen Television Network has covered this story and tells us more. Dennis Francis, the president of the United Nations General Assembly, has called for UN member states to provide sustainable and predictable financial and political support to UNRWA. The United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees operating in the Gaza Strip. Dennis Francis, responding to a letter from UNRWA Commissioner General Philip Lazzarini, said UNRWA has been an indispensable lifeline for millions of Palestinians. UNRWA, which provides healthcare, education and other vital services to the Palestinian people, currently struggles to address the biggest humanitarian crisis since its establishment. The agency was accused by the Israeli regime last month of having links to the 7th of October operation launched by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas against the Israeli regime. The regime's allegations against UNRWA, which were not publicly backed by evidence, have prompted more than 10 donor countries, including the United States, Germany, the European Union, Canada, Japan, to suspend their financial support for UNRWA. The funding from these countries makes up the bulk of all the funding received by the UN agency. UNRWA said being cut off in this way means the agency will run out of money altogether within a matter of weeks. A US intelligence assessment recently cast doubt on Israel's accusations against UNRWA, citing the regime's bias against the United Nations agency. The National Intelligence Council report, released recently, assessed with low confidence that a handful of UNRWA staffers had taken part in the October 7th operation launched by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas against the Israeli regime. The four-page intelligence report indicated that the National Intelligence Council could not independently confirm the Israeli allegations. Separately, the United Nations agency, in a post on X, said shelters in the besieged coastal region were severely overcrowded. UNRWA said clean water is scarce in Gaza, solid waste is accumulating, spread of diseases is on the rise. The situation is catastrophic, but UNRWA teams continue working to provide critical aid to the people of Gaza. A two-month-old Palestinian baby has died from starvation in northern Gaza Strip, according to media reports, as the Israeli regime is charged with using starvation as a weapon of war. The developments come amid reports that people in Gaza have been facing a humanitarian crisis and starvation, as Israel has continued its relentless bombardment and blocked delivery of much-needed humanitarian aid to the besieged territory. United Nations website UN.org has also covered the same story and tells us more. The United Nations Aid Coordinator for the Gaza Strip says no organization could ever replace the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, known as UNRWA, because of its tremendous capacity in handling the situation in the besieged Palestinian territory. Sigrid Karg said recently, there is no way that any organization can replace or substitute UNRWA because of its tremendous capacity, the fabric of UNRWA, their ability and their knowledge of the population in Gaza. Several Western countries, not least the United States of America and Britain, have suspended their funding of UNRWA following unproven allegations by the Israeli regime that some of UNRWA staff were involved in Operation Al-Aqsa Storm on 7th of October last year. Norway, one of the few major donors, has urged fellow donor countries to reflect on the wider consequences of cutting off aid to UNRWA. The people in Gaza are already suffering from lack of food, lack of water, and basic supplies. Also recently, the United Nations warned of a humanitarian collapse in the Gaza Strip in the wake of the funding cuts to UNRWA. In a joint statement, the heads of organizations that form the United Nations Interagency Standing Committee said the halt in funding was perilous. They said, withdrawing funds from UNRWA is perilous and would result in the collapse of the humanitarian system in the Gaza Strip, with far-reaching humanitarian and human rights consequences in the occupied Palestinian territories and across the region. And recently, the political bureau chief of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, said the funding cuts to UNRWA go against an interim ruling by the International Court of Justice on 26th of January to increase humanitarian assistance to the Gaza Strip. Britain's former ambassador to Uzbekistan, Craig Murray, recently said the defunding of UNRWA is a reaction to the International Court of Justice's ruling against the Israeli regime. The Palestinian Prime Minister, Mohammad Shatir, of the Palestinian Authority, has charged the Israeli regime with a premeditated political attack on UNRWA and called for restoration of aid and funding to the United Nations agency. Iran's Press TV has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Islamic Republic of Iran has once again denounced a bitter move by certain Western countries in suspending the funds to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, the main lifeline for Palestinian refugees in the Gaza Strip and in the occupied Palestinian territories. In a post on his X account recently, the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said it is a painful irony that those countries who have cut off their aid to UNRWA following unfounded allegations levelled by the Israeli regime are now widely charged with genocide in Gaza. Kanani said the awakened conscience of the world will judge the decision that those countries made at a time when the Palestinians are going through terribly tough circumstances. Nasser Kanani said, the Israeli regime prevents the delivery of humanitarian aid to the Palestinians of Gaza, and this stands contrary to the UN Security Council resolution and an interim ruling by the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, at The Hague, Netherlands. Nasser Kanani also criticized the hollow expressions of concern by a number of countries about the genocidal campaign in Gaza and their lack of will to limit diplomatic relations with the Israeli regime. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said some of these countries are even providing the Israeli regime with military assistance. In a joint statement, 28 aid agencies and non-governmental organizations have voiced deep concern over the decision by the United States, Britain, and a number of other countries to cut off funding to UNRWA. The statement said, the suspension of funding by donor countries will impact life-saving assistance for over 2 million civilians in the Gaza Strip, over half of whom are children who rely on aid by UNRWA.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
در بعضی از روایات هست از امام کاظم علیه السلام روایتی هست خیلی روایت قشنگی هست
امام کاظم علیه السلام the seventh Shia Imam in a beautiful hadith states thanking Allah for his blessings is higher than the blessing itself this means that the favors of Allah upon us are great but thanking Allah for such favors are rewarded more for instance health and honor are the blessings of Allah However, thanking Allah for giving us such favors is even more important.
میدونید چرا؟ دلیل شاید این باشه چون خدا همه این نعمت‌هایی رو که به ما داده هدف داشته.
But what is the main reason? Allah bestowed upon us all His blessings to use them as a channel to get closer to Him. Health, power, property, money, beauty, and other blessings of Allah are given to us to thank Him more and not to be deviated from His right path. In other words, the blessings and favors of Allah are like a ladder for humans to go up spiritually and find proximity to Allah. This is why thanking Allah for His blessings is more important than the blessing itself, because thanking Allah expands our blessings and at the same time thanking Allah is a spiritual investment in the eyes of Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. in the limelight.
Americans for Prosperity Action, an advocacy organization backed by billionaire Charles Koch and his network of wealthy conservatives, are no longer backing Nikki Haley in the Republican presidential primary. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Americans for Prosperity Action, an advocacy organization backed by billionaire Charles Koch and his network of wealthy conservatives supporting Nikki Haley in the Republican presidential primary, will no longer spend money on behalf of her campaign. Following Nikki Haley's defeat in the early primary states, including her home state of South Carolina, on Saturday night, Americans for Prosperity Action has decided to refocus its mission on United States Senate and House races, according to an internal staff email sent by Americans for Prosperity Chief Executive Officer Emily Seidel and reviewed by ABC News. Emily Seidel wrote that Americans for Prosperity remains confident in its endorsement and still supports Nikki Haley, but recognizes the challenges moving forward into the next primary states. She has made it clear that she will continue to fight and we wholeheartedly support her in this effort, Emily Seidel wrote. But given the challenges in the primary states ahead, we don't believe any outside group can make a material difference to widen her path to victory. Reacting to the news, the Haley campaign thanked the group for being an ally in the fight for freedom and conservative government. We thank them for their tremendous help in this race, the statement from Nikki Haley's campaign said, but our fight continues, and with more than $1 million coming in from grassroots conservatives in just the last 24 hours, we have plenty of fuel to keep going. We have a country to save. Americans for Prosperity Action had a hefty infrastructure in place to combat Nikki Haley's rival, former President Donald Trump, which primarily focused on door-knocking and digital advertisements. Seidel characterized their grassroots operations as a force to be reckoned with and congratulated staff for engaging with over 3 million voters. The Koch-backed group stayed out of the 2016 and 2020 presidential cycles, but utilized significant resources to try and boost Nikki Haley's campaign. It is unclear how much money was spent over the last 4 months since its endorsement, but the group had cash on hand. It reportedly raised over $70 million in its last public filing in June, with $25 million coming from billionaire Charles Koch himself, and another $25 million from one of his non-profit groups. As the group turns its efforts to down-ballot races, Emily Seidel suggested the most important and hardest challenge will be convincing independent voters who refuse to cast a ballot for Donald Trump to support their Republican candidates. The website Politico has also covered the same story. Americans for Prosperity Action, the powerful conservative group supporting Nikki Haley in the Republican presidential primary, will no longer spend money on behalf of her campaign. In an email to staff obtained by the website Politico, Americans for Prosperity Chief Executive Officer Emily Seidel said on Sunday that the group's political arm, Americans for Prosperity Action, had to take stock of its spending priorities after Nikki Haley's loss in the South Carolina primary. The Koch-aligned group, Emily Seidel said, will now focus its efforts on competitive Senate and House races. She has made it clear that she will continue to fight and we wholeheartedly support her in this effort, Emily Seidel wrote of Nikki Haley. But given the challenges in the primary states ahead, we don't believe any outside group can make a material difference to widen her path to victory. Americans for Prosperity Action's decision is the latest blow to Haley's long-shot presidential bid, which has sustained losses in four early nominating states and the Virgin Islands, including on Saturday, when former President Donald Trump beat Haley in her home state of South Carolina by 20 percentage points. Haley declared she will continue on in her primary fight, but has only committed to running through Super Tuesday on 5th of March. Americans for Prosperity Action had funded advertisements and field operations for months last year that were designed to persuade Republican voters to back someone other than Donald Trump in the presidential primary. But it wasn't until late November that Americans for Prosperity Action tapped Nikki Haley as its desired Trump alternative. Since then, Americans for Prosperity has reached out to more than 3 million voters in early nominating and Super Tuesday states, as well as purchased millions of dollars worth of advertisements on Nikki Haley's behalf. Unlike the Club for Growth, another conservative group whose political action committee funded anti-Trump advertisements last year before making peace with Donald Trump, Americans for Prosperity is sticking by its position that Donald Trump on the ballot will make it harder for the GOP to win next November. If Donald Trump is at the top of the Republican ticket, the risk of one-party rule by a Democratic Party captured by the progressive left is severe and would do irreparable damage to the country, Emily Seidel wrote. The last three election cycles have painted a very clear picture of what we can expect from voters who consistently rejected Donald Trump and his impact on the Republican Party brand. Emily Seidel noted Virginia's state house elections last fall and special elections in New York and Pennsylvania earlier this month, as recent data points showing Republicans underperforming. And we should expect this to increase further as the criminal trials progress, Emily Seidel added, referring to Donald Trump's ongoing legal problems. Trump is scheduled to stand trial on 25th of March on charges stemming from hush money payments to an actress. While the decision by Americans for Prosperity Action to stop spending represents a blow to Nikki Haley's campaign, Haley is still raising strong amounts of cash on her own. That in turn has allowed her to sustain her bid despite its string of losses. Olivia Perez Cubas, a spokesperson for Nikki Haley, thanked Americans for Prosperity for its support and said the campaign has plenty of fuel to keep going and a country to save. Olivia Perez Cubas on Sunday afternoon said Nikki Haley had raised more than $1 million online in the last 24 hours. Americans for Prosperity is a great organization and ally in the fight for freedom and conservative government, Perez Cubas said. We thank them for their tremendous help in this race. A spokesperson for Americans for Prosperity Action declined to say how much the organization spent boosting Nikki Haley's campaign. In addition to television, digital, and mail advertisements, Americans for Prosperity Action deployed hundreds of field workers on the ground to knock doors in the early states. Emily Seidel said the group stands firmly behind our endorsement for Nikki Haley, describing her as a special leader with conviction, resolve, and steel in her spine to jump into a tough race with a narrow path.
Yani.
Hmm.
Bazaar.
It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions. Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy.
Hello there, and welcome to the second segment in our two-part edition of Bazaar. Last week, we discussed the knowledge-based production of potatoes in agriculture and how technology has helped expand this sector. This week, the program focuses on livestock rearing and all that goes into producing high-quality meat and dairy. Yum, yum. So stay with us as we check out their economic and national food security contributions.
Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep. This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit. And as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit, and the milk produced is rigorously tested.
Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs.
Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company. Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future.
It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products.
In 2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity. The ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Centre, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns and profit. Khorasan Razavi province specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechi, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini tubers. So what is a mini tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production. You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a soilless system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production. As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us.
After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received 3 consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production. This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress. As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products.
The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and national economy.
Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs 1/5 of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same 2-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are 2 of the major culprits of reduced production.
Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons. However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian. It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group
and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-gray zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their